Welcome to Lynn Cullen Live, talk radio without the static. Email your questions and comments to lynncullenshow@gmail.com. And now your host, Lynn Cullen.
And a good morning at you. It's January 12, 2022. There, I sighed for us all. That's I don't know. I guess we've acknowledged enough, right? That we're all of us exhausted, right? And all of us changed. And rarely for the better. We've acknowledged all that, right? I suppose. Let me read you something that made me laugh. If you're a humorless Steeler fan, it won't make you laugh. But I laughed. I laughed, and anytime anything makes me laugh these days, I hang on to it for dear life. So right off the bat, I'm going to give you two things that made me laugh this morning. Okay, because pretty much everything else did not in any way that kind of reaction. Okay, so the New York Times sports section was doing a piece about the upcoming NFL playoffs, and the headline is "Why Nobody Can Win the NFL Playoffs," and their point was is that this is a year in which all teams are imperfect, very imperfect. There's no obvious, wondrous, perfect team. And even if there were, you know, a little positive COVID test or who knows what could derail it. So the uncertainty is something new. And so to prove their point, they took all of the teams that are in the playoffs and just did a quick little capsule of why that particular team is not going to win. And they did it for all of them. I will only share with you what was said in the Times about the Pittsburgh Steelers shot. Ben Roethlisberger, who is expected to retire at season's end, now throws and runs like a great uncle playing a pickup game at a backyard cookout after three IPAs and two helpings of potato salad. And the Steelers' offense looks like archival footage of a 1928 Pottsville Maroons versus Dayton Triangles game played in a vacant lot during a downpour. Tell me that's not funny. It's one sentence. And I failed to read it without taking a breath. Let me try to read it without taking a breath. That's a sentence should be okay. Okay. Ben Roethlisberger, who is expected to retire at season's end, now throws and runs like a great uncle playing a pickup game at a backyard cookout after three IPAs and two helpings of potato salad. And the Steelers' offense looks like archival footage, I'm not going to make it, of a 1928 Pottsville Maroons Dayton Triangles game played in a vacant lot during a downpour. I love it. I mean, I'm not saying I necessarily agree with the harshness. I don't, with the harshness of the depiction, but it's funny. Tell me that's not funny. All right. Oh. Okay, here's the other thing that I, there are a few things. Chris Potter tweeted something out just a moment ago that made me laugh. His tweet said something that was odd, so I thought, what the, huh? It said, wash your hands after petting your bearded dragon. Now, that's the kind of thing, if you see it, that begs a question or two, right? What? So he lets us know what had happened is he had just seen a statement that was put out by the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control. And I shall read it to you. 44 people are sick in 25 states from contact with pet bearded dragons. And then it says, wash hands after touching your bearded dragon. Don't eat or drink around it, and take other actions to keep your family safe. Well, that made me laugh, too. I thought, oh, my God. Okay. So in answer to a question, when does the CDC suggest that you should wash your hands? I mean, most people would say, you know, because of COVID, after going out, after this and that, after potential exposure, yada, yada, yada. But, well, there's a lot of other things after going to the bathroom, yada, yada, yada. But, oh, my God. I didn't even know people had bearded what? Dragons as pets. And then it turns out these bearded dragons are, got something on them that you don't want to have because it can give you salmonella. Just saying. 44 Americans are sick in 25 states because they have a bearded dragon as a pet and apparently did not wash their hands. Okay, I have a few others that struck me as funny, but let's parse them out, okay? Because we are certain to need a respite at some other point in the program. I don't know what I want to say. There's breaking news, which sent a chill down my spine because it bodes ill for Democrats. The fact that Americans are just exhausted, fed up, coming unglued at each other's throats, yada, 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 yada. Do I keep saying yada, 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 yada today? I do. I'll try to stop. I don't even remember where I was going. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So really unwelcome news that the inflation rate for this year, 2021, it having just ended, I guess it takes them a while to crunch the numbers, but they crunch the numbers, and unfortunately, the inflation rate rose last year faster than it has in any year, 1981. Damn. That's not good. That's not good, because Americans, when inflation is up like that, Americans get very upset, and it informs their vote. I mean, you would think that when what's really being voted on is do you want a democracy or a fascist state, that wouldn't matter much. But most people, unfortunately, we've come to learn, don't pay any attention. And so they're still living as if these are normal times. They're not normal, and they know they're not normal, but they're trying to live their lives. And so they are reacting as they would normally. U.S. consumer prices rose 7% in the year through December. The fastest rate since 1980. And when you see that now, you know, it looks like the CDC, which seems to be a little out of sorts, and the confusion and the constantly changing what you should do. Oh, your cloth mask isn't any good. Whoever told you to wear that? Oh, you need to wear this. Oh, but they can't find them anywhere. Oh, but you need to test. Oh, but they're no, you know, this kind of thing. And the reality is it's happening with a Democratic executive. And Biden will be held responsible in the minds of, I would think, many voters because of the sort of ongoing, I don't even know how to, you know, it is, it's his watch now. And there have seemed to be some real missteps. I've not said this out loud, because I keep wanting to wish it away. But there seem to have been missteps. And now he's rolling out this new angry version, Biden. And I suspect that's a little too late. And I don't understand what the point is if he doesn't have the votes to pass the legislation, the voting rights legislation. And he doesn't. Because of that effing Joe Manchin, not to mention little Miss Pris Sinema, not to mention the entire group of 50 GD Republicans in the Senate, none of whom, by the way, may I remind the media, should ever be termed moderate. They are in lockstep, the Republicans, upholding their leader, Donald Trump. Don't call Susan Collins moderate. Don't call Mitt Romney moderate. They vote with the Republicans. They're not breaking away to safeguard the ability of every American to vote. I keep wanting some Republican calculate, even possibly, I'm sure what they're thinking is I'll get assassinated, because that's what the threat of this kind of domestic political violence that we have already seen with our own eyes, and we know continues. It's what Dr. Fauci was talking about yesterday, about Rand Paul constantly villainizing him and suggesting that he's responsible for the deaths of millions of people. And lo and behold, gets nothing but death threats. And we all know it just takes one. One. So it could be somewhere in the uneasy sleep of some Republican senator. I can't imagine who. They might think, you know, I could go down in history as an extraordinary hero, a courageous person. Some. I'll be ostracized. I'll have to have another identity. I'll have to protect my family. I'll have to move. I'll get killed. And so any kind of imaginings of them being this heroic Republican coming to the rescue of American democracy goes up in smoke, because the reality is they don't have the courage. And I acknowledge it would take some courage, because the threat is real, is all too real. Even Fauci said, I believe yesterday, the odds are that eventually most of us will get this. I mean, the vast majority of us will get this. It's how we're going to kill the pandemic. Now, I got to tell you, that has created in some people this sort of gallows humor view of how to continue, which is I'm going to get it, then I'm going to stop living like a miserable hibernating animal, and I'm going to go out and live my life. And I'll get it. And because I've maybe the calculation is, and because I'm vaccinated and boosted, it's just going to be mild, and then I'll get it behind me and I can keep on going. Of course, it doesn't mean that you can't be reinfected. It also doesn't mean that if another variant pops up, you can't come down with that as well. But I don't want to get it. I want to be one of the few who doesn't, in part because I'm an old person. And we know that old people are most at risk of something serious, even if they're vaccinated and boosted. And I was pleased to see that after Dr. Fauci says, yeah, what the hell, we're all going to get it, that The Atlantic printed a piece headlined, Three Reasons to Avoid Getting COVID Right Now. Okay? And I think you're smart enough to know what those probably are, because I know one of the reasons I don't want to get it now, nor do I want anybody I care about to get it now, is because our healthcare system is overrun. And if you get it and end up having to be hospitalized, well, it would be nice to know that the hospital is not like this seething mess of germs and low morale and staff that has been depleted because they're sick too. And then I read, how is this even possible? I read that in the state of California has said, I don't even, you know, you read stuff and you think, what? The state of California has actually said that, here I have it, and it's from what I consider a reliable source. As an emergency measure, well, it's from the California government. As an emergency measure, California is authorizing healthcare workers who test positive but are asymptomatic to return to work immediately with no isolation through February 1. That's how desperate they are. So you're a healthcare worker in California. You test positive, but you're feeling fine, and they say, come on in. That's what the airlines are doing, too. I know somebody whose husband works for one of the airlines, and he had COVID, and after, I forget how many days, but it wasn't enough, he was told, you get back to work. So there's that. You don't want to get it now because you can help by not being sick. You can help reduce the burden on our crumbling healthcare system. Also, by staving it off as long as possible, you will be giving yourself the opportunity to get treated with these antiviral drugs that are on their way. So the longer you're able to keep it at bay, the more time, again, our faltering system has to get these treatments manufactured, out, and available. And then the third reason not to get it, not to give up and get it now, is what I alluded to before, is getting it now does not guarantee anything. It doesn't guarantee that you won't get it again. Oh, okay. There's all of that. And I just wanted to that. Also, in let me just stick with COVID-related news now. It's going gangbusters here. Cases of COVID are at an all-time high in Allegheny County. And then here's our county health director. Here's a statement from her. We're pretty sure that most of the cases here are Omicron. Why would... This is just me. I pay attention to words. Why would the director of the Allegheny County Health Department say, we're pretty sure? If it's coming from the health department, I would like a statement with a little more muscle. Like, we're certain that. And you know what? Here's my guess. It's only my guess. She's saying we're pretty sure because, in fact, they're not testing to see what. They're not. They don't know what the hell. They know people have COVID. They don't know if it's Delta. They don't know if it's Omicron. But they know that Omicron is the more contagious. And so that's where she comes off saying, well, we're pretty sure that this huge increase, it's got to be that contagious one. But it's not because she has any more info, I suspect. And that's sort of disheartening as well. But, I mean, the cases are just off the charts, considering what we've seen since the beginning of the pandemic. Between January 2 and January 8, there were 23,459 new infections in the county. And you know what? That's an undercount. It is most assuredly an undercount. Because those are only the infections they know about. How many people have it, don't even bother testing, and just ride it out? How many people take a home test, it's positive, they stay home, because they're vaccinated, they ride it out, and they never report it? Technically are supposed to let the county know, but most people would not. And so, this 23,000—it's essentially almost 24,000. That is a big undercount. And Allegheny County has 1.2 million people, so that is a big hunk. And you add that on to the week before, which was 13,300 something, and that means that one in every 50 people is infected. And as I said, that number is, it's probably one in 30. Who knows? As is and has been the case. We're flying blind a lot. A little bit of good news that I've seen on it is people who do this modeling, and because this Omicron, the highly contagious one, which was first found in South Africa and, you know, where we saw it spike, but then astonishingly saw it drop almost as fast, very quickly. And the hope is that will be the same pattern we will see. And if that is the case, the people who do this modeling, it's at the University of Washington, they say their model says that in the U.S., we will probably crest around January 19th. So in a week, we'll hit the top. And then we will start falling. And they say simply because everybody who could be infected will have been infected. And then he goes on to say that they believe that the true number of new daily infections in the U.S. is much, much higher than that, where they say it'll crest at 1.2 million. Do you know what they think it really is? They think it's 6 million. So again, just want to be clear, flying blind. And again, this does not bode well for Democrats with an election coming up in November, unless things really do calm down. And if when the spring comes and the summer and America is living its life again, then maybe this will all be like a bad dream. And inflation will start to slow and the supply chain will ease up again. And, you know, because I am seeing some empty shelves now. And that's got to be because of this. If you've got millions of Americans not working, well, those are the people that manufacture things, produce them, the people who deliver them, drive them to the stores. So that's what's happening again now. And to blame it on the president is, of course, absurd, but that's what people do. So there you kind of have it. I'm sure I got more, but at the moment I can't think of what it is. We have a call? Okay. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. You know what? I'm 20 years older than Big Ben, but if I had three IPAs, I could probably throw the ball farther downfield than he can right now.
Oh, now, come on. That's true.
He's just beat up and
yeah. Well, you know, sure, he's done.
I appreciate what he can do on the field, but I'm not a fan. He's kind of I've always considered him an asshole, but oh well. The reason I called is about COVID. I Christmas week or the before Christmas, they start, they're talking about Omicron and everything. And I'm thinking like, man, holidays coming up and this and that. And talked with my wife and I said, I think we got to like sort of keep it close, you know?
Yeah.
We don't know what's going
to
happen.
I think a lot of people came to that conclusion. Sure.
And, we actually went away for Christmas, but we stayed in a cabin with just us and the dog, you know, and
it was
very quiet, very, very away from people. And I had sent an email to my two immediate bosses saying, look, I think until we know what's going on with Omicron, I'm going to play it safe. I mean, I haven't been feeling well the past couple of months. You know, I'm about to turn 60 and blah, blah, blah. I think I'm going to just stay work from home for a while because we were called back in the office at the end of July.
Mm-hmm.
And I did go in one day, like a couple of days after Christmas, because I had to do something, make hard copies of something. And my boss, he's one of the VPs of this company, calls me, you know, he said, I'm going to meet you in the conference room. And I go and wearing a mask and he doesn't, of course, but he stays pretty far away from me. And he said, well, this is coming down, working in the office is coming down from the CEO. And I'm like, yeah, but we don't know what's going on. I mean, and it's just such pushback.
It's amazing that Americans are being told that if you want your job, you have to risk your life now, right? You have a choice.
Yeah. I mean, meanwhile, these guys are all like, you know, they can't make people get vaccines. It's up to the individual's choice and this and that.
Yeah.
And it's like, so we're mandated to come into work. I was talking with our safety manager who's up in Minnesota or whatever. And I said, and they're still looking at the legalities of everything. So they're not mandating vaccines. They're not mandating knowing people's vaccination status. They're not mandating masks. So the two emails we've gotten from corporate was be back in the office as of August 1st. And two, isolation now has been dropped from 5 days to 10 days to 5 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, they're getting that from the CDC.
But the thing is, they're picking and choosing, because if you look at the CDC guidelines, I mean, they're actually recommending if you're indoors with people, mask up. So to me, it's just picking and choosing.
Here's the one thing. Don't we all know this? It's everyone for themselves. I mean, there is no – I don't feel like there's any – system really in place, and it's if you get sick, you're on your own. If you're waiting for a test, you can wait. My son got a PCR test on Friday. He still has not gotten. I mean, what is the point of getting these tests if you don't get you don't find out anything for 5-6 days later? And
that is
because of the system is overwhelmed.
All these things, you know, I point out, like what's happening. So we're overwhelming the healthcare system. It's like, and I'm wearing a mask, not so much for my safety, but your safety. And I would expect reciprocation, because I think it's very inconsiderate on your part, because the mask helps the others more than it helps the mask wear.
Roger, we've been having this conversation for 2 years now.
And I don't,
right?
I was like,
well,
yes.
Yeah. So I don't know.
So I'm just wondering, like, if they really push going back to work and I get sick, is there any legal recourse? I mean, does anybody out there say, I mean, it's like, because I don't know if I got it from work.
I don't know. I'm sure there will be. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of suits. A lot of suits are going to be at the receiving end of a lot of suits, lawsuits, because people will get terribly ill and die just because they had to go to work. I don't know. Listen, Roger,
it's unnecessary.
I got another call.
Well, later on to talk about what Fauci said under his breath. He got caught on a hot mic.
Yeah.
Funny.
Yeah. The guy's a moron. Okay. Right. Bye.
Yeah,
I think
bye.
He said a moron. Yeah, right. Which is certainly true. Yep. Caller, go ahead. Hello.
Hey, Lynn, it's Mike, formerly of D.C. and USC.
Okay.
Greetings from Destin, Florida.
Oh, for God's sake.
Yeah, and not a single person here wears a mask. I mean, not a single person, except for me. And I ponied up and bought the K95 ones and the N95 ones, and I wear them like I'm going out into a war zone. And what that article that you quoted did not mention is that they're not sure what happens to your brain when you get COVID. They think that an article that I read said that because the people that are losing their sense of smell and taste, so that's one benefit, right? Even if you live, you could not have taste and smell for months. But it's right next to the part of the brain that controls motor function, and that they're thinking that it's going to have a negative impact on Alzheimer's.
Barbara just sent me this, and it's obviously what you saw as well. This was in the Washington Post. Here's another reason to avoid it. There is compelling evidence that COVID-19 will have long-term effects on the brain and nervous system of survivors. And this will become apparent as we age. And there's like a large international study now to investigate the correlation between the coronavirus and cognitive decline, Alzheimer's, other dementia later in life. Now, obviously, you can't know this yet because not enough time has passed. But you're right. What they do know is that many of these infections increase, the kind of infections, respiratory viruses, do increase risk for Parkinson's and other brain disorders. We don't know. You're right. The fact that it's so why would you say, let's just all get it and who knows? And the people who are suffering from the so-called long COVID who never really recover. No one's talking about that.
Right. Those people are expendable because, like you said, it's you're on your own.
Yeah,
right. You're on your own. So figure this out yourself. And
right.
If you get it, I didn't get it. And it's like the Republican mantra, right? As long as I got mine, I don't care about anybody else.
Yeah.
And, you know, this again, I mention this all the time, but this is my second pandemic. And what I learned from the first one is don't be in the hospital when they don't know what they're doing and they don't have enough treatments or enough people where they won't service you. I do not want to go to the hospital for any reason right now.
No.
So why would I subject myself to that? What? So that I can have dinner at a restaurant? I don't get the... I'm fed up with having my life change too. More of asking myself questions all the time. Is this safe? Is this not safe? How dangerous is this? You know, whatever. But that eating dinner with people... That going to a movie, I don't see why that has so much value that you're willing to risk your life or your health on that.
No, I don't either. It's funny. Maybe more people just have less ability to. I don't know. You know what? I don't understand anymore.
It must be denial. It won't happen to me. Everybody's acting like a teenager. Right? Riding a motorcycle without a helmet or even riding a motorcycle. Won't happen to me. It won't happen to me. Well, maybe it won't, but I have a higher likelihood of not being killed in a motorcycle accident if I don't get my 57-year-old ass on a motorcycle.
I hear you.
So, okay.
God help you down there. Bye.
It's no better in Allegheny County.
I don't care. I wouldn't. Every dime you spend in Florida is enriching that goddamn state that DeSantis is in.
Well, you better come now because after the Civil War, we won't be able to see the South. So I'm coming now.
All right. Okay. Bye.
Okay.
Damn, bye. Jeez. Okay. Now. I want to share with you, why don't I have it here? I want to share with you what my state rep said about the idea that the Republicans could come here for their convention in 2024, which is just, the idea is so repellent to me. I can't believe it. So here is a statement by State Rep Dan Frankel. He says, I know that Mayor Ganey and County Executive Fitzgerald, now these guys are all the same party. I know they want to fight to support businesses, many of which are holding on by a thread after 2 years of pandemic challenges. But I also need to protect my traumatized community. The GOP has had many opportunities to reject the hateful ideologies that spurred the 2018 anti-Semitic attack in my district and the unprecedented insurrection that had members of Congress fearing for their lives 1 year ago. Instead, Republicans have invited those elements in. And I think that makes these events, their convention, very dangerous. It's a no for me, he says. And I think that is well said. It is unbelievable to me that we would welcome the attention of the RNC. Disgusting. And I know Bob and Braddock wrote a long piece. He said, my heart was split in two when I found out Pittsburgh was among the final four cities chosen for the RNC convention. Here's my guess. We won't get it. I'm hoping. You can always, it's like, remember when Amazon was looking at us? Where they're big, remember? Oh God, we were, oh, please come and, come and destroy us. Come and take over. Come on. And I was praying they wouldn't come here. And remember, they decided they picked some place in New York City, right? Astonishingly. And then when they started building their thing, some folks in New York City said, wait a minute, what are you doing there? And they got a little pushback. And so they just picked up and left. They only go where they control. And not all about money. Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. Now, my sister yesterday said something about an alarm clock from the 1200s, right? And I said, I don't believe it. And she said, I'll send you the link. And she sent me the link, and I just want to clarify. This is a link about a rare flintlock alarm candle clock having sold for over $20,000 at an auction. It's from 1745. And then this whole thing goes into the history of these clocks. And, you know, 1745, nowhere does it say there were clocks like this in the 1200s or the 1300s. It says here the need for an alarm clock evolved throughout the centuries. In medieval times, the monastery functioned by the church bells, calling those to participate in, worship. The earliest devices with alarm functions were likely developed to ensure that whoever was supposed to ring the damn bell would get up, would wake up to do it. Think about that. Because everything functioned by the bells of the church. By the time the flintlock alarm candle clock was made, and that they believe that was during the 17th and 18th centuries. So I just want to say, yes, I mean, it's a ridiculous thing. I mean, it's a candle and a little bit of gunpowder and, the flintlock, I'll just read this for those of you who understand such stuff. The flintlock is activated when the alarm finishes sounding. The fueled and loaded flintlock is triggered and ignites the wick of the candle, releasing a spring lever, which propels the candle and candle cup into a 90-degree angle, revealing it from under the hinged lid, which hides it. Thus, the room the clock is placed in is soon illuminated. What? What? The flintlock didn't make an explosion. It lights a candle that pops up and the light is to awaken. I don't have a clue. Look it up yourself. Rare flintlock alarm candle clock, if you're interested. Okay. Something else I have to get in here. I want to remind you, I have a guest tomorrow who's written a book about bias, where it comes from, why we humans are so inclined to stereotype and categorize and then put on the group something that one individual of the group may have done. You know, this is we know how it works, and few of us, believe me, are immune. And she's written this book about literally what happens, how it happens. And then she suggests ways that maybe we could start working on pushing it back. I personally, after reading the book, think I wouldn't hold my breath, because we're dealing with humans. And we've all come to know humans a lot more in the last few years. And I'm just not going to believe that enough humans are willing to engage in the kind of work and introspection and self-criticism required to better themselves. I just don't think most people are up to it, I guess. So what I did want, though, to share with you is I saw a tweet from Keith Richards, who I adore. Keith Richards, Rolling Stones. And it's a picture of him looking good. He's sitting outside somewhere wearing mismatched clothes and sunglasses and a little yellow cap. I mean, blue cap. And he says this: "Hi, guys. I want to wish you all the best for the new year. I'm sure some of you were at the shows. I really enjoyed playing to you all again. Thank you for coming. Take care of yourselves. You know, I need you. Keith." Okay. I thought, oh, isn't that lovely? He sent this to me. But again, my peculiar thing of words jumping out at me. There's a word in there that jumped out at me, and I find it fascinating. And it's just a two-letter word. It's the word two, T-O. And here is where it appeared in his tweet. "I really enjoyed playing to you all again." Playing to you all again. Now, that struck me as interesting, because what would you say? "I really enjoyed playing for you all again." And there's a difference there. And so it occurred to me, I'm thinking he's playing for me. He's using the word to. I'm playing to you. And I'm not quite sure what that change means, but it means something to him. And he's the one who's doing the playing. And he thinks he's playing to us, not for us. And if anyone can parse that better, good for you. But it did grab my attention. There's one thing I want to say. There's news out today that the Justice Department has created a totally different whole specialized unit that is now just going to focus on domestic terror. And the Justice Department has said there is an elevated threat of violence from Americans in America. And so there's going to be a whole new unit. Somebody said something the other day, and I think I certainly have felt the same way. How, you know, everybody remembers where they were on 9/11 and how they felt. And I pointed out on the anniversary of January 6th that I felt it was the same kind of, I mean, it was this, I reacted in the same way as I did on 9/11 with disbelief, with you know, shock and horror and fear. And, but the difference is that on 9/11, the whole country watched and reacted in the same way. But on January 6th, the people who were attacking us were us. And that shows why there's now a different whole unit in the Department of Justice of the United States, because, duh, we were focused on terrorists being, well, those different-looking people with their different religion, not good, law-abiding, flag-waving, patriotic Christians. And I saw something else that was disconcerting the other day. Some reporter sat in on some focus group that was being conducted so that people could see how independent voters were feeling about January 6th. And when a questioner said something about, like, how did you react on January 6th? What were your feelings? There was a group of about, I think they said, six women, probably suburban women. And they just looked at the guy blankly because they didn't even recognize the date. It meant nothing to them. So there, too, is a difference between 9/11 and 1/6. I wanted to share with you this thought. I have said I'm nervous about Merrick Garland. He seems so, well, milquetoasty, and he's not like a partisan. It's why Obama nominated him. He thought the Republicans got to vote for this guy because he could just as soon be a Republican. And there's a great deal of concern. We're past a year since this terrorist attack on our government and our democracy. And, you know, what's going on at the Department of Justice? And I keep reading stuff that is making me try to be more patient about all of this. Because when he comes out and starts charging people, going after him, this will be coming from somebody who is known to be cautious, who dots every I and crosses every T. And the speech he gave, what was that, last week? He was, I think, pretty clear that he's following the facts. And it's possible that he could actually charge Donald Trump. And he could charge, certainly, people around him. And apparently, they are really working very carefully, but working. And wanted to share this with you. This came out yesterday by CBS News. The Justice Department is now grabbing prosecutors from positions all around the country. Dozens of prosecutors, let's say, in, you know, who knows what, Washington State, Idaho, whatever. They're finding prosecutors and they're reassigning them. They are being grabbed and they are being detailed to support and to work with U.S. Capitol attack prosecutions. That's a good sign. He's beefing up. He's saying, I need more people. We need to really, I mean, the amount of work that has to be done. If, when you bring a case, you've got a watertight case. I know E.J. Dionne wrote this. If Trump is to be indicted, we are better off with an attorney general who is widely seen as cautious and not reckless. Garland is committed to the idea that there cannot be different rules depending on one's political party or affiliation, different rules for friends and foes, different rules for the powerful and the powerless. And when you think about it, that is the antithesis of Trumpism. And he... do not give up on him just because he's not acting immediately. I also want to point this out, something else that I was reminded of. It was Merrick Garland who investigated Timothy McVeigh, that horrific, deadly Oklahoma City terrorist attack. It was Merrick Garland who investigated Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols' blasts, no pun intended, from the past. And also, it was Merrick Garland who went after the Unabomber. And in all of those investigations, there was not any leaks, not any indication or the indictments were actually handed. I forget if they go up or down. And after those indictments, 100% conviction rate, and nothing got overturned on appeal. It was, in every case, watertight. So, to me, this is something I'm hanging on to, that it could well be that the man we have at the Department of Justice right now is exactly the man we need. I'm just putting it out there for you. Okay? Oh, and I didn't get to the wonderful rat who died in retirement, this guy who saved, God knows, thousands of lives, the African giant pouched rat. I remember when he retired, I talked about him, Magawa. Well, anyway, he died a natural death. Stopped eating his bananas and peanuts and just gave up and died. But he's a hero rat. Sniffing out landmines and unexploded ordnance in Cambodia. By the way, courtesy of you, the American taxpayers, those bombs were dropped in Cambodia by us. Yeah, and they're still there, the unexploded ones, and they're still capable of killing innocent people. All right, so I'm going to have to stop, and I do want to remind you that I'll have a guest tomorrow, and I think it's going to be a very interesting. I mean, I've got so many. I took like 10 pages of notes reading the book. There's so much stuff that is fascinating in the book. So I think we're in for a very interesting hour tomorrow, and I'll hope you will join me. And Jessica Nordell, the author of The End of Bias. Okay? Have a good one, guys. Mask up.
Bye. Lynn Cullen Live, Monday through Thursday from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. and archived at pghcitypaper.com. The opinions expressed on Lynn Cullen Live are those of the host and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of Pittsburgh City Paper or its advertisers.